Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 26th day of December, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And as you might expect, so far as the waste stream is concerned anyway, it's a slow news day and probably a slow news week. Nevertheless, there is a whole lot going on, and I guess you could say pretty much like usual, the waste stream isn't covering it anyway. And let's start with the foremost example on that score, this time courtesy of Hal Turner's radio show, about what's going on the World War III front, where Russia's former president and current deputy chair of the Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, wrote a lengthy article for Russia's Rossiyskaya Gazeta newspaper in which he summarized his thoughts on how the year 2022 has changed the New World Order forever, saying the only thing that stops our enemies today is the understanding that Russia will be guided by the doctrine on nuclear deterrence. And if there is a real threat, we will act, he wrote in the article published Sunday night, noting that in such a grim scenario, there will be nobody left to argue about whether that was a retaliatory strike or a preventive one. Therefore, he said, the Western world is balancing between a burning desire to maximally humiliate, dismember, and destroy Russia, on the one hand, and the desire to avoid a nuclear apocalypse, on the other. And he went on to say that unless Russia receives the security guarantees they've demanded, the world will, quote, continue to teeter on the brink of World War III and nuclear catastrophe, noting that Moscow is doing everything and will continue to do, quote, everything we can to prevent it. And I guess on that score, folks, he's kind of alone, because one thing is clear, the deep state and the Marionette-in-Chief are working just as hard as they can to bring it on. Probably the most important set of stories on the conspiracies revealed front is a continuing saga generally called the Twitter Files. And this one, too, is being largely ignored by the waste stream, which means the coverage this week hasn't changed much on that front either. I'll start with a tweet that came out over Christmas weekend when most of the waste stream was still pretending that Santa Claus exists and the evil of Twitter didn't. New owner Elon Musk claimed in a tweet dated December 24th that pretty much every conspiracy that you've heard about the socialist media platform has, surprise, surprise, eventually turned out to be true. Here's what he wrote. To be totally frank, almost every conspiracy theory that people had about Twitter turned out to be true. Is there a conspiracy theory about Twitter that didn't turn out to be true? Well, so far, he said, they've all turned out to be true, and if not more true than people thought. He was then asked during an all-in podcast if there is a single part of the files that really shocked you, to which he responded, quote, the FBI stuff is pretty intense. Obviously, he didn't realize just how evil they really are. Here's one other example, courtesy of Mark Pellin at HeadlinesUSA.com and also Natural News. In what was called another bombshell release that dropped Friday night, there was a grossly incestuous relationship exposed, they say, between top Twitter executives and Big Brother's officials to proactively violate their own standards. Sick. Ignore their own rules and trash the First Amendment. What, again? In a concentrated campaign to destroy former president and re-elected president, but they lied about that too, Donald Trump. And not to mention, subvert election integrity. The files confirmed that numerous federal agencies, including but not limited to the Federal Bureau of Instigation, was actively aiding and abetting the leftist cabal of Twitter executives during the 2022 presidential election, sick, and especially the unlawful transition to the Biden regime. The third round of damning files that investigator Matt Taibbi released in a lengthy and eye-popping Twitter thread also confirmed that the socialist media titan focused the entirety of its censorship efforts. Now remember, Matt Taibbi himself leans left, so this is a pretty objective report. Anyway, they focused the entirety of their censorship efforts at conservatives while giving aid and comfort to the far left. As Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton summarized it, the newly released files show that, quote, Twitter activist employees without basis suppressed and censored the then President of the United States at Real Donald Trump in the days before the 2020 election, and he said this is damning evidence of election interference, to which Elon Musk responded, unequivocally true. The evidence is clear and voluminous. Kevin Downey Jr. at PJMedia.com has a piece up on Monday morning, also linked via Zero Hedge, entitled Why You Need to Start Paying Attention to the Twitter Files, because basically the waste stream won't. And for those of you not following the volumes of drops, he said, they've now had more sequels than the Planet of the Apes. Let me catch you up on what I believe are some of the most important parts. Starting here, the FBI paid Twitter $3.5 million to censor conservatives. The FBI, number two, pressured Twitter to give them information that would legally require warrants, although they didn't have warrants. Number three, leading up to the 2020 rigged election, the FBI would eventually hold weekly meetings with Twitter and tell them those tweets to squelch and which accounts they wanted to be suspended. Almost all of those, of course, were conservatives, but occasionally there's a liberal, like Matt Taibbi, who will come out and decide, I've had enough of this. And you know, those kind of people can end up on the naughty list too. The FBI knew that the Hunter Biden laptop story was real. They knew it was coming out weeks before the 2020 election, and they told Big Tech to expect a, quote, Russian disinformation drop and squelch the story, meaning the FBI corrupted the election to help the senile hair sniffer and his handlers get away with rigging the election. And the same guy, as it turns out, who really did, among other things, shower with daughter Ashley. There are so many, continues the bullet list here, former FBI employees at Twitter, that they now have their own Slack channel. So, onto a subhead the author calls Factorama. Hunter Biden's laptop from hell proves beyond a doubt that the Biden family took in tens of millions of bucks from their Chinese benefactors, various companies linked to the commies, for no actual discernible work. Well, I guess nowadays we can't say that anymore, now can we? The FBI pressured big tech firms to downplay the story, even making it unshareable, even though the FBI knew the laptop was real. While the communist bum lickies at Twitter were happy to play along, even going so far as to suspend the account of the New York Post for daring to release the Hunter Biden laptop bombshell. In response to the Twitter files detailing how the FBI Twitter circle jerk was real, the Bureau, of course, lying through their teeth again, but we're used to that by now, called anything associated with dissing them conspiracy theories, but never actually denied their incestuous relationship with Twitter. Meanwhile, Elon Musk provided the world with an early Christmas present, he writes, on Saturday, with Twitter files part 9. Which included tidbits like the following. The FBI was a portal, specifically the San Francisco office, for other government agencies to get Twitter to surveil and censor Americans on their behalf too. Hiding under the title of FITF, or the Foreign Influence Task Force, SIC, actors from local police departments to the Department of Defense, SIC, and the CIA were all watching and censoring Americans, and not really so much foreigners. Twitter wasn't the only big tech firm hip deep in spooks. The feds had their fingers in other big tech socialist media giants like Verizon, Reddit, Two Facebook, Microsoft, and for some reason, Pinterest. And as the 2020 election neared, the FBI FITF assailed Twitter with hundreds of requests to censor Twitter accounts and tweets, and there were so many such requests that Twitter execs had to come up with a system to prioritize all the censorship before the election. And is this any surprise? FBI employees were doing so much work censoring real Americans that they had to be tasked with doing word searches on Twitter, looking for violations of Twitter policies rather than chasing real criminals. But hey, wait a minute, that would have hit way too close to home now, wouldn't it? The FBI, as it turned out, had roughly 80 agents working with big tech, public-private, fascist partners. And it's unclear, says this piece, just how many members of the DOD, CIA, ETC were involved. Bottom line, what have we learned? The FBI is not the only Big Brother Gestapo-like agency censoring and surveilling the American people. Twitter, though, was a veritable pig pile when it comes to spying on we the people. And the DOD, CIA, and even local police had their fingers in the pie. Twitter was only one of those pies, though. Other big tech firms, though, including Two Facebook and Verizon, were deep into the game. Big Brother really is watching. We are being spied on. We knew that. We're frequently now being silenced. Well, at least anyone who dares to speak out against the Stalin-like censorship and surveillance of Americans. And yes, folks, when it comes to acts of treason, certainly deserving of the constitutional remedy, therefore, i.e. the death penalty, let's not forget Twitter and the bioweapon. The latest edition, dropped by journalist David Zweig, focuses on how Twitter rigged the COVID debate by taking direction from both of the previous I want to kill as many people as possible regimes, Trump and Biden, while at the same time trying to censor the former president. Isn't that an ironic twist? I guess when he's willing to do their dirty work, then and only then are they more than happy to let him speak. What's somewhat notable, says the piece, is just how aggressive Big Brother and ex-Big Brother officials were in trying to stifle free speech, while Twitter's non-government-linked employees would often push back and then totally fold, a theme we've observed a whole lot over recent drops. In one such instance, former head of Twitter's Trust and Safety Team, Joel Roth, tells former FBI lawyer, then Twitter Deputy General Counsel Jim Baker, Menachemo, to calm his tits, unquote, over a Trump tweet. Zweig was granted access to internal files while on assignment for the Free Press, and he noted that, quote, both the Trump and Biden administrations, sick, directly pressed Twitter executives to moderate the platform's pandemic content according to their wishes. What's more, the censorship effort didn't stop there. It extended to Gulag, to Facebook, Microsoft, and a whole lot of others. Zweig summarized it this way, though. The Twitter files. How Twitter rigged the COVID debate. A, by censoring info that was true but inconvenient to U.S. government policy. B, by discrediting doctors and other experts who dared to disagree. And C, by suppressing ordinary users, including some that had the chutzpah to share the CDC's own data. Here's one damning bit of information. In July 2021, the then U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy released a 22-page advisory concerning what the WHO, World Health Organization, SICK, referred to as an infodemic, and called on socialist media platforms to do more to shut down what they laughably and disgustingly and murderously, as it turns out, called misinformation. Quote, we're asking them to step up, said Murthy. We can't wait longer for them to take aggressive action. Let me interpret that briefly here, folks. People might start waking up and decide not to take the additional poison pokes that we want to put into them, and who knows how many people might not die as a result. We can't have that now, can we? And that's the message that the White House had already taken directly to Twitter executives in private channels. One of the Biden regime's first meeting requests was about COVID, with a focus on anti-vaxxer accounts, according to a meeting summary by Lauren Culbertson, Twitter's head of U.S. public policy. And they were especially concerned about one Alex Berenson, a journalist who was skeptical of the idiocy surrounding lockdowns, mRNA vaccines, and, of course, a lot of other stuff that destroyed the economy and millions of lives. And he had hundreds of thousands of followers on the platform. By that summer, the day after Murthy's memo, the Biden puppet announced publicly that social media companies were, quote, killing people by allowing free speech. Yes, misinformation, as that liar put it, about vaccines. Just hours later, Twitter locked Berenson out of his account and then permanently suspended him the next month. Berenson sued Twitter and ultimately settled with the company. He's now back on the platform. And as part of the lawsuit, Twitter was compelled to provide certain internal communications, which revealed that the White House had directly met with Twitter employees and pressured them to take action on Berenson. The summary of meetings by Culbertson, emailed to colleagues in December 2022, this month, adds new evidence of the White House pressure campaign and illustrates just how aggressively they tried to directly influence what content was allowed and, I guess more importantly, what wasn't allowed on Twitter. Culbertson wrote that the Biden team was very angry that Twitter had not been more aggressive in deplatforming a number of accounts, and they wanted Twitter to do more. There's a lot more in here. The Biden regime actually seemed to be more aggressive even than the leftists at Twitter in the executive ranks. But no doubt about it, Twitter did suppress views, not just those of journalists like Berenson. Many medical and public health professionals who expressed perspectives or even cited findings from accredited academic journals that conflicted with the official White House narrative were also targeted. As a result, legitimate findings and questions about COVID policies and their consequences went, missing. And that's putting it really charitably, folks. And it's really clear that a whole lot of people have died or are fixing to as a result. The author outlines a couple of other obvious problems with Twitter's censorship efforts, including the fact that much of the content moderation on COVID, and he adds to say nothing of other contention subjects, was conducted by bots trained on machine learning and AI. He spent hours discussing the systems with an engineer and an executive who'd been at the company for more than a year before Musk's takeover, who explained that basically the bots were fed information to train them about what to look for, but their searches became more refined over time as they both scanned the platform and were manually updated with, important new things to watch out for the peons being allowed to know. At least that was the premise. Trouble is, the bots would prove too crude for such nuanced work, says the author. Sometimes you snag more than the fish you were looking for. Second, contractors operating in places like the Philippines were also out there moderating content. They were given decision trees to aid in their process, but tasking non-experts to adjudicate tweets on complex topics like myocarditis and efficacy data were destined to fail with a significant error rate. The notion that remote workers sitting in distant cube farms are going to police medical information to this granular degree is absurd on its face. And let's not kid ourselves, folks. The real issue here is that this was done, whether we'd like to admit it or not, with truly evil, downright satanic even, intent. Zweig, however, pulls his punches a bit more than your host would. Most importantly, he says, the buck stopped at the higher-level employees at Twitter, who chose the inputs for the bots and made the decision trees. They determined suspensions, and as is the case with all people and institutions, there was both individual and collective bias. At Twitter, COVID-related bias bent heavily towards establishment dogmas. Inevitably, dissident yet legitimate content was labeled as misinformation, and the accounts of doctors and others were suspended, both for tweeting opinions and demonstrably true information. And they give several examples of that, including the cases where expert opinion happened to be in line with vaccine policies in a number of other countries. Yet all of that was deemed false information by Twitter moderators merely because they differed from the Aktung CDC, and that means Center for Death and Control, folks. Let's not kid ourselves. Official guidelines. He goes on to say, in my review of internal files, I found a number of instances of tweets about vaccines and pandemic policies being labeled as misleading or taken down entirely, sometimes triggering account suspensions simply because they veered from CDC guidance or differed from establishment sick views. Again, more examples. I guess the author should be credited for actually allowing people to draw their own conclusions, something that clearly Twitter and all of those public-private partners run by Big Brother's minions, minions of Satan it seems, walking in men's shoes, didn't. And therein lies the rub. Honestly, folks, I'm sick of hearing the excuses at this point. The only misinformation these satanic, evil people cared about, wanting to make sure folks didn't get, was the kind that might save their lives or prevent them from committing injecticide. Oh yeah, or letting their children be destroyed. I'm honestly sick and tired of mincing words. This was a clear, unequivocal war on not just the people of America, but the whole world. Here next, at least a bit of good news on the pandemic front. This one comes from Ethan Huff at Natural News about COVID testing. And there is a medical organization called the SHEA, or the Society for Healthcare Epidemiology of America, that has now revised its guidelines to urge hospitals to stop, cease, desist, also called testing, on all new admissions for COVID. Not only is the cost high for both patients and providers, but, and this is a laughably obvious thing by now, folks, the practice is medically useless based on the fact that the tests simply don't work. There's a related story here. Even the FDA has now admitted that COVID testing is pointless because COVID has never actually been isolated. But, of course, the level of alpha and beta errors, or especially false positives, is too big to ignore, or certainly too big to deny. Pre-admission testing, says Shia, does little, if anything, to prevent transmission of the virus, and it can also prevent patients from receiving the care they need based on the changes to treatment that are made following a positive test result. And as you may recall, some of those treatments, including things like remdesivir or the death sentence of being placed on a ventilator, are, to put it mildly, more than a bit counterproductive. These changes come, says the story, amid the so-called triple-demic of not just COVID, but also seasonal flus and something called RSV, or respiratory syncytial virus. The establishment has been, again, trying to scare people out of their minds and into taking the poison poke over. Universal COVID testing creates a ripple effect, says the story, and the group, that ends up causing delays in how emergency departments deal with patients. And that's especially true, they say, amid the triple-demic surges that see lots of sick people, especially, your host can't help but think, those with already suppressed immune systems due to multiple instances of the poison poke, overcrowding the emergency rooms. This tool, asymptomatic screening, is a unique yet resource-intensive tool that arguably has been overused, said the panel in recommending their new guidance, which was published in the Journal of Infection Control and Hospital Epidemiology. Let me summarize it as bluntly as the article does here. COVID testing is, has been, and remains a farce. But hey, I guess there is one more observation that could be made here. It really is a great way to have an excuse to shove something up people's noses if you want a different way of getting it into their bodies. This next item is a story that links several others together. It comes courtesy of Stephen Stanford and the All News Pipeline under the headline, "Little Did They Know That the Vax Mandate Would Be a Death Sentence." Well, folks, I have to disagree right up front on that one. I think there were a whole lot of people, including the Dr. Mengele of the Fourth Reich, Tony Fauci, who knew blankety-blank and well that it was a death sentence, and they were salivating at the prospect. But hey, that's just my opinion about the man who's probably the most evil, in my opinion, to walk planet Earth for who knows how many centuries. But as we'll see, the headline isn't referring to those who were pushing the poison poke, just those who were duped into getting it. Regarding this linked story over at the Daily Mail, he begins, "Thursday morning broke my heart, reporting that a great hero had just passed away. It was a 47-year-old decorated Navy SEAL Special Operations Commander named Robert Ramirez III, who was found dead at his San Diego home just 1 month after taking over the elite SEAL Team 1 command." And commentators on the story wasted no time in telling people what was almost certainly the likely cause. Oh yeah, you know that the waste stream itself is going to ignore this and deny it, but one thing cannot be denied. The military was forced to take the poison poke, so we know darn well that Ramirez was given the Zyklon B. The top-voted comment on the story came from one Lori in Texas, who said, "Probably he got the forced mRNA injection." Duh. And all the rest of the top-voted comments and responses show why the globalists ought to be shaking in their satanic boots as people across the world begin to awaken, but more and more rapidly, to the clot-shot genocide. And while military officials recently claimed that the death of Ramirez was by suicide, and I guess since he allowed it, you could certainly make a case on that score now, couldn't you? The commenters on the original story saw what the military and the government are so clearly hiding. "Of course he got the jab," said one. "He was in the military and in a position of leadership. It was mandated. Little did he know that it would be a death sentence." And there comes the real title in the headline. Said another, "We're literally witnessing a slow-motion die-op. Not psy-op, but die-op. Being pulled worldwide by the New World Order, and yet only a small percentage of us are awake enough to acknowledge it. It's surreal, like we're sharing a Twilight Zone episode." Here's a really cute one. "The best thing about being a conspiracy theorist, especially when it comes to the poison poke, is a lack of myocarditis." Another wrote, "Well, what the Taliban couldn't do, the vax certainly did." Another added, "There was no foul play involved, unless, of course, you count the military and their mandatory injections." What with Commander Ramirez's death occurring at the same time as any number of other sudden deaths, like the recent death of the NFL Pittsburgh Steelers running back Franco Harris, who died unexpectedly just hours after doing a radio interview in which he told the interviewer he felt great. The author points to a recent ANP story entitled 2023 is going to be replete with excess deaths, and we're clearly watching that continuing to unfold right now. And let's not forget, Franco Harris was also a CDC spokesliar, urging other Americans to do as he did. Take the poison poke and, yeah, die. And here's what Stephen Stanford's leading up to. What with one element or another of the United States, well, government, or what now passes for it, supporting coronavirus gain-of-function research from Ukraine to Wuhan, and then all the way back home to North Carolina, or is it the other way around? And with the globalists showing us their latest playbook entry for their next catastrophic contagion, a warning that their newest bioweapons have probably already been released upon us, considering that it was just a couple of months after their event 201 that all of the COVID hell and the pandemic broke loose. Whenever Bill Gates and the WHO hold exercises simulating the annihilation of the human race, you can pretty well bet something is up, and probably that means something is coming real soon now, so we'd better be paying close attention. Because with support among Americans for the clot shots plummeting, as pointed out by Dr. Joel Hirshhorn, and here he links another ANP story, the globalists definitely need to unveil a new scheme to get the dumbed-down masses scared all over again and eager to line up for the latest lethal injection. Most of them having no idea that the poke might bring about a death sentence, as so many people across the globe are now learning the hard way. And thankfully, while the vaxes aren't killing off everybody, others are learning far too late that the clot shots often come quite close, what with devastating side effects, such as those now being suffered by singer-performer Celine Dion, who was known to be fully vaccinated and is now suffering from an extremely rare, at least once rare, disease called stiff person syndrome, which just happens to be one of the listed many side effects of the Pfizer messenger RNA or mRNA injection for the Fauci booga booga flu. And given that we now know Pfizer knew about the link between its poison poke and the stiff person syndrome all the way back in early 2021, and the Federal Death Authority officially becoming aware of that link in April of 2021, why were the American people never told that taking their mandated poison poke just might lead to such catastrophic side effects? Well, because doing so would have created vaccine hesitancy. And if we've been watching the Twitter files, we know that they were pulling out the stops to make darn sure people weren't allowed to hear about that. There's a moral here, folks, but you know you're not supposed to hear it. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.